tests. Now, we've heard a lot in recent days about the demands on the COVID-19 testing system, particularly when it comes to community testing for those who are showing symptoms and who need to be looked at. But there is another wing of it too, which is the hospital testing that takes place in laboratories. And there are some serious concerns about the demands that are being placed on those there as they try to not only test for COVID-19, but still keep hospitals up and running. I have two guests in studio this morning to discuss some of the challenges they're facing. Kevin O'Boyle is a senior medical scientist at Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital in Drogheda. He's the chairperson of the Medical Laboratory Scientists Association. And we're also joined by Mary Cullerton, who's laboratory manager at the National Maternity Hospital in Holles Street. She's past president of the Academy of Clinical Science and Laboratory Medicine. And as of yesterday, she's president-elect of the International Federation of Medical Scientists. Mary, congratulations on that. And thank you both for coming in this morning. Kevin, just to start with yourself, and I suppose to distinguish that we are not talking about community testing like drive-through venues right now. We're talking about the testing that's done in laboratories in hospitals, which is necessary to test every patient who comes in.
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand that there's two streams of testing for COVID-19 in operation in Ireland at the moment. The focus, rightly so, through the lockdown has been on community testing, which has been predominantly carried out at large-scale industrial testing sites, the National Virus Reference Lab in UCD and Enfer Veterinary Lab in Kildare. And these use large batch testing, automated techniques for testing the community. But parallel to that, we have running in the hospital system throughout the country, testing for hospital patients within the existing laboratory structures.
So understandably, obviously, everyone who is admitted to a hospital, you need to make sure before they undergo a knife or any kind of a treatment at all, you have to make sure that they are COVID-free. And that means that every person admitted to a hospital needs to be checked first.
Absolutely. So the focus on hospital testing has been predominantly on testing symptomatic patients who are presenting to A&E departments and being referred to the hospital, testing patients pre-admission, pre-operative testing, and then maintaining the staff hub, which is trying to get these very quick turnaround times for staff within the hospitals to prevent staff absenteeism, which is obviously...
So when we talk about getting symptomatic testing and patients who are obviously showing symptoms and therefore need to be tested as a matter of urgency, what percentage of the overall workload of hospital lab testing is that making up?
Don't have a terribly recent figure on that. I looked at something from July last night and I think it was in the region of 2/3 were from community testing and 1/3.
But as regards the tests that you're doing in a hospital lab, that the vast majority of them, imagine, are from people who aren't showing any symptoms but who just need to be checked as a matter of routine to make sure that the hospital is a safe place.
Yeah, well, of course, the symptomatic patients would have a much higher percentage of positivity. But the pre-admission screening and so forth is relatively low incidence.
Mary, you're obviously in the National Maternity Hospital, which is a very sensitive and very difficult place to work for at the best of times, particularly so in the last couple of months. But how much have the demands on the laboratories there been increasing in the last 6 months or so?
Well, during the initial lockdown period, the activity in the hospital, in all hospitals, was reduced. There was no elective work taking place. So we were able to redeploy the scientists that we had working in other departments who had less to do, perhaps. We were able to redeploy some of those in some hospitals to working to do with the COVID test. We also were trying to make certain that our staff didn't become infected. So we were trying to maintain social distances and work in teams. That then, as the hospital activity increased, as the COVID pandemic dimmed, or went into a lull over the late summers, then we moved people back to where they used to be, and we were still doing testing for all the patients who were coming in for surgery. So they need to be tested within 72 hours of coming in for surgery. And the negativity rate, like, they were all negative. In the last two weeks, we're seeing a change, and we're beginning to see much more positivity in those that group of preoperative patients.
So people who are coming in for elective surgery, they're now showing up as being more COVID positive than they ever were before.
That's right. In the last 2 to 3 weeks, some of it is residual disease from a previous time, but some of them are new cases. And that is getting, I would say, this past week has shown more of that than the previous 2 weeks. So it is a worrying trend. And we can see they're talking about excuse me, they're talking about the staff in Neffet being tired this morning and worn out. Well, I think the medical scientists are tired and worn out.
No doubt, and that is what I wanted to talk to both of you about this morning as well. But just on the point that Mary's just raised there, Kevin, have you found a similar anecdotal increase in the number of people who are just being routinely tested who are now showing up as being COVID positive?
Yeah, I would say that's just starting to come true now, and I suppose that's just reflecting the numbers of community transmission that's going on.
So
at
it
the
just reflects the pro rata where we are as a society.
Yeah. I mean, if I might say, sure. The National Maternity Hospital also provides a service for the Ioneer Hospital.
Okay.
And the positive patients actually have been from that cohort rather than pregnant women, lest anybody get worried.
No, and it's a worthy clarification to make. But it must be quite a worrying thing that if you're testing people who otherwise are not showing any symptoms and they're just getting a routine test before a surgery or some other routine admission, that suddenly you discover that they're carrying this virus that we've all been so petrified of for the last 6 months.
And that's going to become more important as we come into the winter now, as we start to see the expected overcrowding in A&E departments that we see every winter. It's very important that COVID-19 is not allowed to circulate within the hospital setting where we have so many vulnerable patients. So we can only expect to see an increase in demand on the laboratories in the hospital sector over the coming into the winter.
A theme that I want to focus on this morning is because we've heard so much about the workers who we perceive as being the frontline workers, those who are literally administering tests or administering frontline care to patients, whether they're COVID positive or not. But there's obviously other people who are a very important part of the machinery and the structures and the choreography of all of this, namely medical scientists, the likes of which you're representing today. And they, I take it from both of you, didn't have quite as mad a March and April because you weren't dealing with any elective procedures. But as hospitals have come back, then the work has gone off the charts, really, isn't it?
I would say the work was different during April and May. There was a lot of focus on management of the patients that were coming in with COVID-19. So we were developing new testing panels for patients with interesting prognostic markers, adapting tests that were often used for other reasons. That turned out to be good markers for COVID-19. So an example would be the D-dimer test for coagulopathy, which we would do some tests of on the normal run of things. But it turned out to be a very important test for COVID-19 patients because coagulopathy is a major part of the disease etiology in COVID-19. Similarly, a ferritin test is normally to look at your iron status and assess patients with anemia. But ferritin turns out to be a very good marker of, because ferritin is an acute phase protein and therefore reacts to inflammation and infection in the body. So it was a very different time in laboratories, and laboratories had to adapt very quickly to this changing circumstances. And I think it's a credit to the medical scientists in the country and to the multidisciplinary training that they have, that we were able to move people around, move people into microbiology labs where the COVID-19 was being tested, into point of care testing, which became very important through the months of April and May, where blood gas analysis was required at near patient testing, which are devices near the patient, as it suggests. Which are used by doctors and nurses.
I'm hearing a lot of flexibility here, which I suppose then also places extra demands on people like yourself and people who are operating all these laboratories to make sure that the testing is done. Do you have the adequate staff that you need to make sure that people are able to get, you know, to perform that at a high quality and also to get the downtime they need?
We did during April and May when the elective surgeries were not going ahead, when patients weren't coming into outpatients departments.
So the workload was different and you could live with it then.
Sample numbers were low and I suppose we had that little bit of breathing space from that. But now we're coming into the winter. The health service is back up and functioning again. People have to go back to their day jobs. And, you know, at a laboratory manager's meeting in January 2019, there was a survey amongst the managers. We had 131 vacant medical scientist positions. Now with a pool of 2,600 medical scientists in the country, that represents 5% of the workplace, of the workforce. And I suppose those figures don't include business cases which were submitted for, you know, laboratory medicine is very much an evolving state. Business cases will be submitted for new services that are coming online and so forth. So the real number would probably be a lot higher.
So what I'm taking from that then, Marion, maybe you've had the same experience or that you could second what Kevin's just said, but that we're already in a situation where to perform all the tasks that were required of medical scientists, that it was fairly hectic, all feet to the floor, that the hours would be pretty insane. Now you've got this extra, very acute pressure to make sure that everyone gets the COVID testing, but you don't have any extra resources to deal with it.
That's right, Gavin. I think the issue is that we were stretched to start off with. As Kevin has rightly mentioned, it's not just the COVID test itself we've been looking at, but we've been developing the tests to monitor those patients when they're in hospital, to assist the clinical staff to say which patients are going to do well and which ones are not going to do quite so well. But we also have another issue where we now have the patients who are supposedly recovered from COVID, who got it in March and April, who are now presenting with what they're euphemistically calling long haul disease or long COVID. And they have an extraordinary range of conditions that we need to find out how can we monitor those best. Is it one condition? Is it several conditions? Is it individual to the patient? Do we need to have personalised medicine for this? Or what is the problem
All of which then has a testing requirement.
All of that which is going to have a testing requirement. And when we think that way back in January, the test for COVID didn't exist. And during that time, the medical scientists have got it up and running. They've gone through reagent shortages. They've had to change equipment. They're now running into reagent shortages again for the rapid tests. And all that time we have to be changing the way we do things and verifying that it's done correctly so that the public and the patients are kept safe and they can trust the results that we give out.
Certainly hearing that a reagent shortage is on the cards as well is not welcome, but I suppose people understand that these things can only be manufactured at a certain speed.
It's also the fact that the rapid tests are being globally diverted to countries where they have less sophisticated laboratories.
Okay.
So it's not just...
They need a quicker fix.
They need a quicker fix. So it's not just the manufacturing capacities and plastics are in short supply, but it's also global decision making.
One would say that if the HSE is taking an approach that money is no problem for this very short term, that we're dealing with an unprecedented event and that you can't be skimping with the financing and resourcing, the obvious solution would be just recruit more scientists. Why can't we?
Because they're not there. It takes 4 years, essentially, to grow a medical scientist. Medical scientists, when they're qualified, they're a regulated profession. They need to be able to reach the proficiencies that are laid down to keep the patients safe. They need the medical scientists that are qualifying at the moment in Ireland will be able to work in biochemistry, hematology, microbiology, histopathology and transfusion science, also able to work in immunology.
I'm not going to lie, there's lots of polysyllabic words there that I don't understand, it sounds like it's 4 years training anyway.
It's 4 years training. So it's academic training and clinical placement training. You can't take somebody who has done a general degree in science, who has done no pathology as such in their education and training, and just put them in a lab and say, put on the white coat there now and do what you're told. That doesn't work. It doesn't keep the patient safe. So yes, we can take some of those in, and we can hopefully put in place a program to train them and educate them to potentially be medical scientists. But you can't run a lab with those. And so there's probably every lab in the country could well do with one or two of these extra people to assist. But actually taking the responsibilities and signing off on stuff needs to be done by people who know what they're doing.
And
so we'll take any help we can get. But it needs to be, there needs to be a clear program for these people to be brought in, properly inducted and shown how to work at pace. Because while many scientists who have been in universities or in academia will be doing many of the PCR tests by research, they don't have an idea how to do them, operationalize it into doing hundreds a day.
Sure.
And all the quality control and checks and balances that need to go with that.
And Kevin, I was looking at your Twitter profile before you came in this morning, and your pinned tweet is a thread about the professional circumstances and the training and generally the remuneration for people who are entry-level medical scientists. And it's pretty grim reading, where you get the general impression, I don't know how quickly you can summarise it, but you get the impression that these people are the linchpin of what labs need right now. We absolutely urgently need loads more than we're actually training. But those who were training, it's very difficult to hang on to because of the circumstances that they walk into.
That's exactly it. We produce about 90 to 100 graduates in this country through three recognised courses that are recognised by the Statutory Registration Board, the CORU. Of these, unfortunately, many are not coming into the profession of medical scientist.
Where else are they going?
Some are going abroad, some are going back to postgraduate medicine, to research, to do PhDs. They're going into pharma industry. They're very attractive graduates to pharma because they're very well educated and trained in working within a quality management system and a robust one that's continuously improving and adapting. We're losing a lot.
So to put it bluntly then, is it a case of whatever the public system can offer as regards perks, remuneration, conditions versus whatever the private sector can offer, and there's no competition really?
If we're going to keep them, and particularly this year's graduates who are just coming out now because their studies were slightly delayed due to the lockdown, we need to offer them more than we're offering them now. And like a great example of that is a lot of the medical scientists who were in their final year of their studies were working as laboratory aides who are supervised by medical scientists and report to medical scientists. And the starting point on the scale for laboratory aides is actually higher than medical scientists at the moment.
So the people to whom these other lower order technicians answer are paid more than the medical scientists who are their bosses?
So we thanked them for their training and education, and congratulations, you've got your degree. I'm afraid you have to take a pay cut now. And, you know, the people who you were working with will now report to you and you will supervise them.
It's a fairly grim prognosis, all in all, to think that the lab workload is becoming so much more difficult, that we're not even towards a flu season yet, but that you're going to have to do all the regular patient testing for flus and everything else that you'd have to do routinely, plus the extra strain of COVID, with no extra resources, with the absolute urgency that the situation requires, and all being kind of on the precipice of all being burnt out already.
That's where we are, I'm afraid, yes.
Mary, is there any more uplifting vista that you can put in it, or is that how bad it is?
That's essentially the way it is, because not only are the staff working full-time during the day, the service is provided 24/7. So you have people who have worked a full day, who are then working through the night. And the appetite in the country for diagnostics is growing exponentially. And the preparedness of people to wait for a result is shrinking. So
We have this societal clamour that particularly when it comes to COVID, you want your result before you've taken the test.
They want the result in 15 minutes. And every so-called expert is saying, well, there's this new test and that new test and they're trying this here. And it's raising expectations as to what is reasonable. And the most important thing is that there is quality assurance around what we're doing. So this week, clamour about using salivary testing for children because it'll be so much nicer for them than the awful swab that is taken at the moment. But saliva is a nasty material to work with. It's very dirty. It has lots of enzymes in it that break down the proteins that will break down the virus. So salivary testing as a medium for rapid throughput testing is not coming anytime soon, in spite of the hype that's going around.
So, I kind of want to try and finish on a more uplifting note, but I'm finding it very difficult to find any kind of positives within the clutch of negatives here, because you're basically saying that the demands are going to only keep getting bigger, that we all hope that there's not going to be a very, very steep second wave, but that if it comes, it's going to revolve not only obviously the community testing, but the hospital lab testing as well, which compromises the ability of hospitals to do all the other testing that they already need, which has been carried out by staff who are underpaid and burnt out, and where there are vacancies that can't be filled.
Well, I think we can put a slighter, better slant on it than that. I think we need to acknowledge the phenomenal work that has actually been done by the HSE during this time and the National Pathology Network. They have, all the labs in the country have stopped competing with one another and have come together. And it was evident that the, particularly when we had the first reagent shortage, the labs were sharing their knowledge, they were sharing the reagents. There were people driving around the country delivering stocks to other people. The HSC has put in a capacity review where they've looked at the equipment that is needed for all the hospital laboratories to meet the demand over the summer, over the winter. That has moved on to business cases, and my understanding is that the equipment is for the most part on order. I know that I'm expecting my new equipment in later this month. The capacity to provide the reagents to run on those analyzers is also being managed nationally through national procurement with the advice of the National Pathology Network. And that is ensuring that the reagents and supplies are allocated where they're needed.
Okay.
Concomitant with that, we must have the same approach to providing staff. And my understanding is that there are talks underway. Perhaps if we were here in 2 weeks' time, we might have more information on that. But there is a recognition in the HSE that staff are needed. There's also a recognition that they don't grow on trees.
Can you chime with that sort of positive note that at least there is a recognition, if not delivery on the solution?
Yes, absolutely. And I would add to that that, you know, when you talk to young graduates who are just coming out of college now, their focus is very much on a career trajectory. So, you know, it's not about that pay cut when they get their exams. They want to see where can they go with this. They're enthusiastic. They're excited about working at that very special mix in a laboratory of the clinical practice and the scientific endeavour. And I think if they could be offered the career trajectory that they're looking for, that would entice them to stay within the profession. And if we can keep them graduates and start to introduce more through postgraduate training schemes, I think this can be fixed.
Okay.
And you know, we are in talks with the Department of Health and the HSE.
So it's fixable, right? At least let's cling to that on a positive note.
We have. Laboratory medicine is a hidden profession within the health service, and I think the COVID testing has brought it into focus. It needs investment, and the response to COVID is an immediate response that we need over this winter. But to keep this service providing the health service that people in this country need to stay well, we need medium and long-term plans to keep this service going, and that's investment in equipment and staff.
Well, because it's been hidden, it was one of the reasons why we wanted to speak to you both this morning. So thank you both for coming in and really shining a light on what the conditions are like. Thank you both for everything that you've done to try and keep the country going. And thank you to all of your colleagues as well. And thank you both for just coming in, because obviously downtime is at a premium. So I appreciate you both taking the time on a Sunday. Kevin O'Boyle, Senior Medical Scientist at Our Lady of Hurwitz Hospital in Drogheda, and Mary Cullerton, who's Laboratory Manager at the National Maternity Hospital in Holles Street.